News Radio KMAN speaking with General Perry Wiggins of the Governor's Military Council. And we were talking a little in the break there, maybe a little too long as the music started playing, but we're going to talk a little bit about there was earlier in the pandemic, there was a sort of a restriction on permanent changes of station. And as you mentioned, there's a little bit of a misconception out there. Some people still think that's in place.
Yeah, the Department of Defense and the Secretary of Defense with the COVID, when it first came on the scene, they decided to hold on permanent change of station moves. And so a number of service members were basically stuck on their stations when they had PCS orders to move somewhere else. That's been lifted. So those moves are now ongoing. Some of them might have been later than others, but we're back in the permanent change of station moves. And I know I've gotten a lot of questions from individuals asking me about that. There are some extenuating circumstances and some unique circumstances, but overall, for the Department of the Army and really for all services, that's been lifted and there are moves ongoing.
And speaking of some moves, the U.S. Announced, I believe, on the late July, a plan to pull out 12,000 troops from Germany. And some of those folks will be coming back to Fort Riley. And is there any potential for redeployment of those folks? What sort of impact are we expecting here at Fort Riley, either from the return or possible then redeployment after return?
Yeah, and just to clarify, the troops that the president talked about, he was going to lift and shift out of Europe, specifically Germany. None of those have been decided upon where they're specifically going. But, we just recently had a portion of the division headquarters do a transition of authority, and they returned home a few weeks ago. And so those folks are back at Fort Riley. The 1st Cav Division, I believe, took over that particular mission from the 1st Infantry Division. So that's great news. There is a planning process ongoing. The Air Force is adjusting some of theirs, and they put out some information about moving some commands out of Germany and moving them into Belgium. And that was just a report out. The Army, I'm sure, is doing a lot of planning to see if it does in fact happen, where they're going to lift and shift the troops that were in Germany. Some of those, I suspect, and this is only my opinion, will stay, but probably move forward into other areas like Poland and Europe. And then we'll have some formations that will probably come up and return back to the continental United States. So what we do about Fort Riley is similar to what we did when we were trying to get additional force structure in the form of a armored brigade combat team or a SFAB, try to get those formations to come to Fort Riley because I think it's a great place to serve. I personally do. You know, you always hear it's a great place to come to, live, deploy from, return to, and in my case, retire. So we believe that we're working, we're positioning ourselves, taking a look at the infrastructure, taking a look at a lot of the quality of life initiatives, and we're getting some of our legislators involved to take a look. And if some of those troops are coming back to continental United States, I think Fort Riley is a great place for them to come, train, and be ready for their mission. But you know, those decisions have yet to be made. I'm sure there's somebody out there in the G3 shop, the training shop of the Army, that are looking at that with a fine-tooth comb. And when the president ultimately decides to make that decision, they'll execute accordingly.
Do you know what percentage of troops stationed in Germany this would constitute? Is this all of the U.S. force in Germany? I'm not familiar with the numbers outside of this.
No, I think, and don't quote me, I think there's approximately 25,000 to 30,000 troops in Germany. So this is a large hunk of that force that's over there. That if they took the 9,500 or 12,000, as you stated, I mean, so this is a good chunk. It's not all of them.
Okay.
I think, to be honest with you, as you heard the president talk on television, and maybe rightfully so, you know, we support NATO with these troops. There is a requirement in the NATO charter that says the countries that are a part of the NATO agreement pay 2% of their GDP to support the NATO mission. And we've had a lot of European partners that have been delinquent on paying their share. And the United States over time has paid a significant portion of that burden. And I think now we're just saying, hey, listen, you need to, if it's an important alliance, then let's support it. And you support it by troops and dollars.
And I believe Germany spends about 1.5%, so about 0.5% under that 2% GDP that is requested or required in that NATO deal.
That's correct.
When you make these sorts of large-scale movements like this, I imagine there's a lot of logistics that you'll all have to come to terms with to make this happen. So what sort of work is going to have to go on behind the scenes? I imagine there's going to be a lot of planning.
Oh, it's significant logistical exercise. I mean, you know, everybody, I think Napoleon once said that, you know, tactics are for amateurs, logistics are for, you know, professionals. And the bottom line is that's really true, because logistics really drives the train. And so as we start to take a look at any theater we're moving out of or pulling troops out of, there's a huge logistical tail that has to be done. And those are the unsung heroes in our military. I mean, I'm an aviator by trade. I was an infantryman first. And we in the combat arms, as they call it, always try to pick on our brothers and sisters in the logistics side. But truth be told, we have great respect for those that do that type of work, because the math involved, the physics involved of moving thousands of tons of equipment and moving people is incredible. And sometimes it's mind-boggling. There's a book out there about Desert Storm, and it is really an incredible book that I read many years ago. That after I read it, I just sat back and thought, man, what I did in that war was small in comparison to what our logisticians did.
And where it's 9:56, we're coming up on our cap here pretty soon. So as much as I feel like we could talk a lot more about this topic, but before we get out of here, I do want to talk about the 2020 census and sort of the importance it has it has importance for communities across the country, but specifically in regards to the military. What are some of the importance that this plays for military communities?
Well, you know, the bottom line, as it does for everybody in the community, you know, Kansas right now sits at about 66-67%. We're a little above the national average, but that percentage that we have not necessarily in the self-response responded, that's close to about $20 billion to the state of Kansas. And those dollars support programs, it supports representation. It supports, just like with the COVID, for example, all the relief that came in response to the COVID, the numbers that they used to provide that particular relief was based off of the 2010 census. So if we don't count all the individuals that we have within our state, or we miss somebody, that's a significant impact with regards to humanitarian relief or response or disaster relief response for our state. And I think, you know, those of us that have gray in our hair, those of us that have children and grandchildren need to understand that our actions for the 2020 census, they not only impact us, they impact our children and our grandchildren. And we don't get to change anything for 10 years. The next census will be 10 years from now. So that the importance is it really gets you representation, it gets you services, and things that are critical to support really our most vulnerable in our communities.
And I know the Census Bureau is going to be taking the lion's share of the effort. Is the Army or other military departments or installations, do they assist? What type of support do they play in helping out, making sure the census has a complete count?
Well, they don't do a whole lot of support to the census itself. What they do is they participate. And so what's good is the military on the installations get counted in the place where they are stationed. So all the individuals that are stationed at Fort Riley get counted into the numbers for the state of Kansas. It's just, and so that's great news for our state. That's why increasing infrastructure and all those things and force structure on those installations is critical, because, you know, those people on those installations, they need to be counted as well. So if you're a military person living off the installation in a community, you have a obligation to really complete your census for your state of Kansas where you reside.
And it's about 9:59 here. We're going to have to close off the show. As always, there's always more to talk about with a lot of our guests, but we appreciate the time, General Wiggins, and thanks for calling in.
No, thank you, Nick, and I appreciate it. And everybody have a great day.
Of course. For those who listened or want to just missed out on a segment or maybe want to re-listen to the whole show, newsradiokman.com, that'll be up by this afternoon. Head on down to the on-demand section and look for In Focus.